is the New York State AFERD podcast entitled A through Z Health and PE. We are your co-hosts, Drs. C and C, the true Pan-American connection. I am Clancy Seymour, and my tag team partner is the one and only Dr. Victor Ramsey.
Details highlighting our episodes, guests, contact information, publications, and other useful resources will always be included in the podcast show notes. For more information about New York State AFERD, please visit newyorkstateaferd.org or Facebook and social media handles at New York State AFERD. Let's embrace the journey, and now, on to our show.
Greetings, listeners. I'm Dr. Clancy Seymour with my co-host, Dr. Victor Ramsey. Doc, how are you today?
I am terrific. I'm finally gotten back to my running routine after surgery for plantar fasciitis. So I'm excited about that opportunity. Feeling good. The weather, as you know, is nice down here. And yes, always nice to be here with you, my friend.
For sure, for sure. That plantar fascia, it's like, that's like a snake bite.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I tell you.
Mm-hmm. That's tough. Yes. That's tough. Indeed.
Indeed.
Well, welcome to the New York State AFERD A through Z Health and PE podcast. In this episode, we'll be discussing a new book entitled Critical Race Studies in Physical Education. And fortunate to have both authors, Drs. Tara Blackshear and Brian Culp, join us for today's show. Very exciting. Dr. Blackshear is an equity scholar who specializes in health, physical activity, and education. She's an assistant professor of kinesiology and the coordinator of the physical education teacher education program at Towson University. Alongside her recent publication, Dr. Blackshear has authored several journal articles committed to equity in social justice and health, physical activity, and education. Dr. Blackshear, humbled, and thank you for joining us today. And please say hi to our listeners, our panel, and of course, the illustrious members of the New York State AFERD professional community.
Hi, welcome, and thank you. And I am going to give myself a shout that I recently earned tenure and promotion to associate professor. I'm in limbo, right? I just finished my sixth year, and then it doesn't technically take effect until August, but
big congrats.
I do remember on the Twitter feed, congratulations.
Congratulations, Doc.
And yes, associate professor.
Well deserved, indeed.
So being an associate professor at Towson, would you like to share more about yourself? Where are you from? Your current pursuits? Anything like that?
I'm originally from Detroit, Michigan, but left soon after high school, went to Florida A&M University, HBCU in Tallahassee, Florida for my undergraduate and master's degree in health and physical education. I taught 10 years in the United States, 7 overseas, including Egypt and Thailand, and I repatriated in 2016 to Towson University to start with the goal of being on the tenure track.
Very impressive.
On the tenure track, I guess, hard stop right there.
Sure, for sure. Indeed. That is a hard stop. Absolutely. well done. Now you mentioned repatriated. Are you still a Detroit sports fan or being raised in Detroit, or you've moved on to bigger and better things?
I am still a Detroit fan, all sports, no matter the condition. And I guess a close second right now are Baltimore teams.
Okay. All right, cool.
The Ravens, okay. since that's where I reside right now.
That's awesome. That's great.
I'm glad you said all sports, because I just got into hockey and I think I'm an expert already, because the Honorable Clancy there is from Toronto, and he got me hooked on hockey, and I love the Rangers that got there far, but I'm glad that his Lightning got knocked out, but that's all right.
Well, my Lightning knocked out my Leafs, but that's a different conversation. Thank you, Dr. Ramsey, and I'm glad that you've started to enjoy the game of hockey. And Dr. Blackshear is a Detroit, and she knows about Detroit sports in particular. Detroit Red Wings are very, very good in hockey in Detroit and won lots of Stanley Cups. Lots of fun. So sharing the stage with Dr. Blackshear is Dr. Brian Culp. And aside from attending Toronto Maple Leaf hockey games with yours truly, Dr. Culp is a professor at Kennesaw State University. Dr. Culp has published numerous books and articles addressing equity and social justice, physical education, and coaching. And of course, we're certainly also honored for you to join us today, Dr. Culp. Please say hi to our audience and offer some words.
Hello, New York State AFERD Podcast. Glad to be with you. We've been avoiding each other the past few years. I've been trying to get up there for a conference just to kind of see what you all are doing, because I have a lot of friends and colleagues that are in the state of New York. So one of these days, I'm going to make it up there and we're going to have a good time.
Indeed.
Absolutely. And that is a goal, to get both of you up to our New York State AFERD conference.
Yes.
That would be fantastic. So great stuff. Thank you once again. So we will be discussing Drs. Blackshear and Culp's latest publication, Critical Race Studies in Physical Education. And so we have some questions for you, and hopefully you can kind of elaborate. Dr. Lindsay, why don't you start? Yeah,
absolutely. Yes. If we were to discuss this book, we would need a podcast. We would need an entire day because of the content and the information that is so meaningful and useful for our practitioners today. But I'd like to get started with asking both of you, do you want to tell us about a little about the genesis of this book? What got you started? What was the origins? How did you come about bringing this idea of we have to bring this to the larger audience of health and physical educators? And in the same question, did you anticipate any pushback or any setbacks or challenges per se?
Brian, you want to take the first part of that question?
Absolutely. I think it's actually pretty funny. You know, let me back up a little bit. So January of 2020, some of you may be familiar as higher education conference named McAhee. I was finishing an article on third space thinking, and I was done with that. And you go, I'm getting into mid-career zone. So I'm sitting there saying to myself, okay, I'm done here. I'm just going to kind of sit back and chill out, kind of just write a few things and kind of ride out the next 20 some years in the sunset. As we kind of know, 2020 was a violent year. So what started happening, obviously, you started seeing the things sort of happen to, first of all, society, but in particular, Black people. And around about that time, I started reading some information from Dr. Tara Blackshear here about some of the work that she was doing relative to standards, relative to the unbelievable paper Shaped So White. And we had met each other at the IASEP in New York in Adelphi like the previous year, and I come across some of her work. And essentially what happened is that through a series of conversations, she reached out and asked, would you be interested in working on some projects together? And again, at that particular point, I was like sort of done. I was kind of trying to rest up, and I started looking at some of the things that she wanted to work on. I said to myself, you know what? Yeah, you're doing some of the stuff that I would like to do. I've just never had anybody to really bounce some ideas off of it. So make a long story short, we sort of started talking about some things and ended up working on some projects. And then those particular projects ended up working into the genesis for a book, because we had so much information that we said, you know what, we might as well try to write a book on that, because if not now, then when? So I'll present that piece, and then Dr. Blackshear, I think, is going to fill it in a little bit better way.
Okay, and I'll add to what Brian said about we had some opportunities through Thomas Lawson or Shape America Publishing to author a book and or journal paper. So we both talked about that, and then we both had ideas, and obviously we settled on the case study book. I do want to talk about the title of the book as we get into, did we anticipate any potential pushback or challenges? We actually name the title before critical race theory was an issue in the United States. And it was really a play on case studies. They're critical case studies that happen to be centered around race. And so one of the pushback as critical race theory became a thing, Brian and I talked, I said, you know, I wonder if we're going to get some pushback. Are we going to get some pushback? And right at the end, one of the three Human Kinetics finalizing editors raised the issue and proposed a title change. And Brian and I were like, no, this is the name of the book, and it's not changing because we have some irrational, hateful folks out there who are ignorant to what critical race theory is. And so, no. Fortunately, Thomas Lawson and Scott Wickren, who was the lead editor, they were on board. They said, we support you in this mission. We support the book. We believe in the mission. And so that was really, I think, the pushback pre-publication. And then we've since had only one. I'm actually surprised. We were expecting more critique of the book, but thus far we've had two criticisms, and one was directly through HK, and then one was one of our contributing authors whose colleague sent I don't even know how to describe that email, but how would you describe that email, Brian?
I'm glad you asked. You know, it's an email that was going to a voyage of nowhere. And what I think that the person that wrote that email should have said is that they just don't like topics related to Black people. That's what should have been said. And I mean, and to the point about pushback, you know, we recently put a blog out last week. Well, we put our blog out last week that just talked about supporting Black students. And we addressed why do we call the name of the book critical. And I think one of the lines that we had in there verbatim is essentially is this. P is no different from any other education subjects that need fewer performative gestures and promises. And we are in need of more strategies that bring about measurable and sustainable change for marginalized populations. So in getting to the nuts and bolts of like how we are addressing some of these issues that we'll probably talk about a little bit later on is that, you know, we have a lot of people that don't think that these topics have a place in physical education. We have a lot of people that don't pay attention to news. They don't pay attention to what's going on in communities. We have documented inequities in resources, documented inequities in space, documented inequities in terms of people having a war on bodies, specifically Black bodies, as we've seen over history. And we are thinking about Black bodies in terms of the United States and to a large extent the global, thinking about legitimacy and trying to work these different pieces. Well, when is a Black body legitimate? And typically that's when we're doing something for a government versus us being left alone and people attacking bodies as well. So, and then, you know, you got things such as the suicide rate between Black teens going up. So these were some of the things that have been going on that we just decided we wanted to address, and we knew we were going to get pushed back from it. I mean, just the society that we're in right now has an aversion to talk about issues related to Black people.
Quite impressive with your the bold approach, the honest approach, transparent approach. It is here to stay. And in fact, you mentioned the title. I was just blown away by the cover itself. And when describing the cover in the book, that's something that people often don't even pay attention to sometimes. But when you describe it, it's such a beautiful cover, and that is very inspiring. So I just wanted to add that. And thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That will be another podcast to discuss the thousands of pictures we looked through to finally find the one we felt was perfect.
Yep.
It, you know, it speaks to, you know, what Drs. Blackshear and Culp already spoke to, Dr. Ramsey, you know, with the title of the book itself, it speaks to being uncomfortable. But being uncomfortable means you have to learn more about the situation before you start making judgments, right? And, you know, I consider myself, you know, an equity learner. I'm learning all the time. And, you know, what I found particularly fascinating about the book, and as I continue to learn about social justice issues, we're always comparing a Black body, a Black person to the white person. Why can't we get rid of that comparison? Why can't we stand amongst ourselves? And so that's the thing that I found fascinating with the case studies. And the book, you know, Dr. Blackshear mentioned, the book is an account of case studies. And it's fantastic. I found it riveting. I found that they almost ended too quickly. I wanted the story to continue to find out how it ended up, you know, on all of the situations. So it was really well written. Kudos.
Lots of cliffhangers. I agree. Yeah. I was like, oh man. Yeah.
Kudos this
read,
to you. To
one, the case study is read like a novel. Like,
yeah, wow. It was fantastic. And kudos to both of you. And then of course your contributing authors. It was just really well written, compelling.
Yes.
So my question from this is, how might K-12 physical educators and or PEAT faculty use these case studies to their advantage, or perhaps educate fellow colleagues who may be uncomfortable and need to learn more before they start making judgments?
Okay, I'll take this one. I think if someone's feeling uncomfortable, I think that is a signal that they actually need to engage and question why they feel uncomfortable. And I think our book challenges folks who consider themselves anti-racist, allies, and so forth. So if it's triggering different feelings, I think that's the push, the call to actually open the book or purchasing the book. Then they need to read the book cover to cover. And so from the preface all the way through the end with the suggested activities. And Brian and I joke about this, but a family member of mine was asking some questions and I said, you clearly didn't read the beginning of the book because it sets everything else in motion. It helps you understand what's to come. And so that will be the first step for physical educators and educators broadly. Fortunately, Brian and I are hosting a professional development that starts this Wednesday for 10 weeks with educators, district level, state level, practicing teachers. We've got one peak candidate and some folks from USA Lacrosse who will engage in this professional development surrounding the book because we're trying to fine tune it for peak programs. Obviously there are 8 case studies. Most semester systems are 16 weeks. So the goal for an undergraduate program would be 1 case study per week or every 2 weeks or 1 to 2 weeks, I should say. So that's really the recommendation because it's going to take time to reflect, process, and try to synthesize some of the information because it's pretty heavy. And if you're not Black, I think it's going to take a lot more time to really process and reflect and compare and, you know, compare and use those stories to see what's actually going on in your schools and your school systems with your teachers and so forth. I think one of the beauties in the book is that it's not only centering Black students, you also have Black faculty, mm-hmm. Black educators, and the experiences that they are confronted with as well from their students. So there are a lot of dynamics going on there. But the first step is to read the book cover to cover, engage in all of the discourse questions. And some require some research. Hopefully it's an educational tool as well, because, you know, as we see with the attack on CRT, 1619, the recent publication by Nicole Hannah Jones, people don't want to learn the real history of America, and Black history is the history of America. And we're going to keep circling back to these vicious cycles of racism until we do address, confront, and then atone for those past behaviors that still, you know, are evident today before we can actually experience a more perfect union.
Well stated. I may add that when having these conversations with folks as well, their question is always, what can I do? So the book lends itself for those opportunities with those suggestions at the end of each of the case studies. And I love that because within those questions, any school district and or school administrator can put together a nice workshop to address a given issue that may be confronted in each one of those case studies. I found that was fascinating, very useful tool.
Yeah, and Dr. Ramsey, I'll also add this. I mean, you know, I'm glad that you mentioned, you and Dr. Seymour mentioned the fact that it felt like a cliffhanger after every case study. That was the point, because these issues continue and they work in a continuum. And in different communities, you can have the foundation of all of these issues, but how to quote unquote solve them may be different. Mm-hmm. And it's different based on experience, demographics, obviously social class, representation in schools. It's designed to make people critically think about what they can do, because so often when we do work in this space, EDI, People want an answer. They want, where's my answer? I don't have to deal with it anymore. Let's move on, check box, and move to the next thing. This book, as we've mentioned before, you can't hide in this book. There are going to be things about this book where I don't care how, where you are from an EDI perspective, you're going to feel uncomfortable at any point. And to that point, to mention what Dr. Blackshear has mentioned, you need to start at the beginning. We've had people start in the middle, and you need to start at the beginning of the book, because if you understand that foundation, then I think everything else will be good for you as you go through each of these case studies, and they are going to challenge you. And that was part of the whole point. So just wanted to add that in, because I'm glad that you mentioned that, because that was by design.
Yeah. And I'm going to suggest to my chairperson to make this book a requirement. In fact, I am going to have this conversation with her. She was on a sabbatical, so she's back now. So I'm going to suggest that to her. So let me ask you this question. Why study the challenges of Black children in K-12 physical education versus other demographics? Why don't you share with our audience and our listeners here, why study Black children in these settings, in these spaces, as opposed to looking at other demographics? I just want you to elaborate on that for us.
Yeah, I'll start with a few points. Well, I think we first need to understand that just generally in educational discourse, Black voices are left out. They're not even represented. And when they are represented, particularly in PE, it's gravitating toward that athlete, superhuman imposed athlete that can do everything, but we don't think about the other different sides of that particular students. We talk about social emotional learning and all those things, but athletically, we still look through Black students in this really strict lens. We recognize that Black students are not a monolith. I mean, we often will sometimes say that all Black students are the same and we prescribe for these particular things, and that's not necessarily true, because we recognize that depending on your family, depending on your neighborhood, depending on your education, religion, and community context, those things change. I think we recognize as well that Black children, and when we think about the whole piece of institutional racism and historical racism, those things impact self-esteem, they impact mobility. We've talked about social media and the negative connotations that go along with that in terms of achievement. And then I'll just leave with this, because I know Tara's going to fill in with a few things as well. We think about how the country's laws have been structured. I mean, there's been a lot of discussion over the past few weeks about the role of the Supreme Court. And I think what people don't understand is that all of our laws, our voting procedures, our legislations, in terms of how we move, how we do things, they've been structured to discriminate against Black culture, and in many cases, co-opt Black culture and not necessarily remunerate for that sort of taking culture. So I'll stop there.
Yeah, and I'll add that, you know, we're Black and no one is coming to save us. I mean, this has been shown time and time again. If you look at the research, Black children are the most neglected, underserved, and ill-treated group in America and in its public school systems. Most Black children are educated in the American public school system, and many of the practices that we are engaged in really do promote the school-to-prison pipeline. And it used to just be Black boys, but now more recent research is, you know, suggesting that it's happening to our Black girls as well. The unique experience, the legacy of slavery with Black folks, most Black folks in America, is very unique to other racial groups. And then the other racial groups, and sometimes Black folks, also engage in anti-Black racism. And so I think when we lump people of color, and why a lot of Black people aren't on board, is because we've experienced racism from many Asian groups, Latino groups, and so immigrant groups. And so, you know, this needs to be addressed, and it needs to be isolated. We do not center Black children enough. And I think if we did, we would see some of the issues and barriers break down or weaken. But it's really bringing awareness to the negative experiences that most Black youth experience in American school systems, even in physical education. So I think we have this notion, Kathy Jamison and Smith, I can't think of her co-author, but they have a paper about I can't remember the exact title, but it's basically kinesiology's always been rooted in white male supremacy. And so we've never been, you know, fair play and team sports brings us together. There's another book, Fair and Foul, the paradox between sport and something. Eitan and Sage, one of the authors recently passed, but, you know, we, as Brian mentioned, we put up these performative aspects of equity, but when you get down to the nitty gritty or the foundation, it's incredibly weak.
Wow. What a wake up call indeed.
Indeed. And Dr. Blackshear mentioned history and Black history. And there's an old saying, and I don't know if I love it completely, but there's an old saying that history is often written by the winners. And I'm not sure I would use the term winning when we talk about our history, because I'm not sure there's winners and losers. It's certainly history is written by some people with a vantage point. And I think Dr. Blackshear is spot on, Dr. Copper spot on, that that Black history is a part of our history. It can't be separate to that. And so I think that's really important. Well said, compelling. So, you know, Drs. Blackshear and Culp, as esteemed African-American Peat professors yourselves, what positive experience do you have so far in the discipline? Where have we improved? But of course, what challenges are still ahead for us to take immediate action?
All right. Well, I'll go ahead and start with this one. So I think positive for me, and nobody asked me where I was from, I'm not offended about that, but we'll be okay. So I'm outside of Atlanta, Georgia, where we're talking about sports stuff, you know, defending world champion Atlanta Braves, which is going on, you know, defending University of Georgia football national championship. So I just want to go ahead and throw that in there where everybody else is talking about winning.
Yeah.
All these other pieces. Anyway, so growing up in a town full of sport losing gives you an appreciation of, you know, physical education in terms of teamwork aspects, outdoor aspects. I've had the opportunity, and this is a good and bad thing, let me back up here, because there's not a whole lot of people that look like me. And so when I go into neighborhoods and I'm doing programs with youth and they're asking, well, what do you do? And then I'm telling them I'm a professor and I bring programs or I grants, it brings a different level of representation to the table because students are seeing that in ways that they haven't necessarily thought and conceived that people can do that. And when you tell them, you know, you can be a part of athletics, but you don't necessarily have to just stay and play a sport in order to participate still in these types of things, it opens up more of some things to them as well. Some of my international experiences, Clancy, you know, I've spent a lot of time in Canada. It's sort of a second home. I've been to a lot of countries around the world to do study abroad programming. Currently right now doing some things in the Dominican Republic. We did some things for years in Africa and Nicaragua. Those things are exhilarating. But it also reminds you when you go to some of those conferences in those places, just how few representation you have. That's including things such as citations. When we talk about journal articles, that's a piece that I think that's missing. I go to too many international conventions where I'm one of maybe five people at that convention who's of color, and of people who are Black and from the United States, maybe 2 to 3. Those are some things that I think we need to improve upon. I think when we talk about EDI issues, really discussing the history of people who've done this work, I think that's an area that we need to improve upon, because we are really horrible with our history of people of color, Black people who participated to get us to where we are right now. And more often than not, those different experiences get forgotten. And when we bring them to the table, we're looked at as we're trying to start trouble, when we're only just trying to make sure that the history of people are told. So, I'll stop there, because there's a lot of things about immediate action plans. And I think there's a lot of things that we already have done. It's just a matter of just making sure we kind of confirm it. So I'll pass the mic over to Dr.
Positive experiences. I had to actually really think about this one, because as far as being a Peat professor, now I'm not including my K-12 teaching experiences, but recently getting to know Brian and other Black professionals in the field, That's been a positive experience, and starting to formulate sort of an underground network of opportunities that typically are not afforded through the typical PEAT channels. And there are a host of opportunities. And fortunately, a couple of our white colleagues inform us of these opportunities that just don't reach our inboxes. And so I think that's been a positive aspect. The impact I've had on students, K-12, all types of students, the feedback has been great, from, you know, working in the hood to working in international schools with all races, cultures, ethnicities, and that I continue to have on students. For example, I am the first and only Black woman faculty member in my department. And so sometimes our students who are predominantly white, sometimes I'm the first Black educator they've encountered. And I'm just as real as I am with you all, I'm that real with them. And I'm willing to take chances and the risk. And I talk about the tough topics that no one else is talking about in my department. So I do think that perhaps that's a positive, despite a lot of the negative situations I've had to overcome to remain in this position. And a lot of that, you know, I attribute to the people who came before me, our ancestors. You know, I think about our enslaved ancestors and Jim Crow folks, and like, okay, this is just, can I make the pathway a little bit easier for the next person to come behind me? Because Brian, you know, many a day I'm like, I'm out of here. And so that brings me more pride, I guess, not really a positive experience, I would say, but more of a proud moment to make, you know, make a history mark at my institution. So, but hopefully we can change some of that. And unfortunately, I don't think we've really improved as a field. In fact, I think we've gotten worse. We're still recycling the same issues that we were 10, 20, 30, 50 years ago. And so I don't see much improvement beyond performance. And what was the final part of the question? Oh, what challenges? The same challenges. I recently gave a keynote for PHE Canada, and the title was Putting Racism on the Agenda. Like, equity, diversity, inclusion, again, we're lumping all of the groups, all of the marginalized folks into one pot. And you must separate racism, anti-Black racism, if you want to move the needle for all groups. And so I think, you know, we're not even willing to, you know, for example, Shape America, and they know I have issues with this. We're not even willing to ask our members, what is their race, gender, ethnicity, sexuality, and all the other demographic data. And so, because we can't really make decisions until we know who our members are, who we're serving, who we're not serving. And so I wish I were hopeful. And I'm an optimist, but I'm not very optimistic in the direction that PEAT and PEAT programs and PEAT leadership and PEAT organizations are. I'm not impressed with the trajectory.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you so, so much for sharing this. Two things that stuck out with me is when you talked about when you speak to your students. I've always said to my students, my PEAT students, that in this class, we will be discussing politics, because politics drive our lives. And I don't mince words, and I'm honest with them about that. In fact, I think it brings about awareness of things that they otherwise may not be even paying attention to. For example, during this whole entire Ukraine debacle, I had students from other countries that suffered, in fact, even more to some degree, who said, well, how come our country, and they asked me this question, how come it's not mentioned as much in the media? And this is my opportunity to teach students how to navigate some of those challenges that they will subsequently have to deal with in their lives. And another word that you mentioned, that you said, that I thought was very important, was the word enslaved, because oftentimes we tend to, again, perpetuate the word slave as it belongs to Black people, to people of African descent. We say the slaves instead of the enslaved. So I appreciate you using that. So we take semantics for granted. I don't. I pay close attention to that. So again, as a new member of Shape America Board of Directors, and I'm just getting my feet wet, that will be perhaps, I'm sure, a topic that will be at some point of discussion, to your point that you brought up about the demographics, specific demographics pertaining to that. So thank you for sharing that. In fact, Jopur mentioned there was an editorial about students practicing Ramadan and some of the nuances associated with making certain that they are their needs are addressed appropriately in our physical education spaces. So thank you. Thank you very much. Brian, Clancy, you want to ask or add anything to that?
I agree with you, Dr. Ramsey, and thanks to both Ryan and Tara and Tara for your brutal honesty. We need that. In order to you mentioned moving the needle. I came across after these case studies, again, compelled to want to learn more, and wishing these case studies would continue so I could find out what happened to Star or Bashir or any of them. And I agree 100%. Tara's spot on. We need, in order for us to move forward, and move that needle, we have to continue to work and we have to be honest. And in this particular case, Tara's being brutally honest. And I love that.
Indeed. Yeah. Talking about what happened, I was thinking about the N-word case study with the little boy. I wonder where he is today. Like, what is he doing today? You know, like, oh my goodness. That's so like, thanks for leaving me hanging there, but that's okay. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
But yeah, go ahead.
It's such a thing. And I mean, one thing also to add, you know, we talk about organizational responsibility. Mm-hmm. And I always think about that in terms of like community and government groups. And people always look at me when I'm funny when I say this, but let's think about this. People pay money into a system and they're not getting the same services. I always go back to that when I'm talking to my classes, whether if you got membership and you're bringing in all these quote unquote diverse members, are people getting the same bang for the buck? And we can extrapolate that to other things in the society when we talk about resources. So we can't put on the EDI hat and say that we're here for everybody and then everyone's not getting access to the same amount of services. So I will leave y'all with that.
Yeah. And not listening to your Black members who are telling you what we need. Indeed. And so, you know, we're telling you what we need. We didn't ask you to celebrate Juneteenth. We're asking you to collect demographic data. We didn't ask you to put a Black Lives Matter footnote on your page after the death of George Floyd. We are asking you to collect demographic data. And you consistently show us that you're going to do status quo Joe, is what I call it. And it's frustrating. And so the real mission is really not to grow membership, diverse membership, because the actions show otherwise time and time again. This is just one of many examples that I'm sharing, but the actions don't meet the words. The words are empty. And congratulations on your new role, Victor.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And I look forward to the great Charlie Sism say, if you don't have a chair, a seat at the table, bring a folding chair. So that's my goal, you know. So in the book, you reference a sign that's posted near a clock with the words, are you working? Please share with our listeners what might be the messaging there?
Yeah, you know, I'll give you some background of that. So that is a true story. That is real. And so, in fact, in some schools, some of your membership may see that sign that says, the clock is working, are you? It's a part of a lot of classrooms, and it's very subtle hidden curriculum that most people aren't aware of. You find these a lot in a lot of schools that are we consider urban or populations of color. And the hidden message is essentially, well, one of the hidden messages is that, you know, the teacher is the manager and the students don't have voice. You have to think about that. So these are things that are often in PE classes and health classes and classes where we just sit there and say, you know what, look at that clock. If you're looking at that clock, then basically, you know what, you got to remind yourself if you're working or not. And if you're not, then you're doing something wrong. There's no interaction. There's no creation from students. It's just the teacher is a manager and the student is a student. And we have to, one of the things to think about is how many times do we do that in physical education? And when we do things like that, who does that benefit more, the teacher or the students, particularly in situations and particularly for this book, when you're dealing with Black students and we're just putting them on a task management type of piece. So that was
That's awesome. And you just taught me something that I plan to use. Go ahead, Clancy.
That was fascinating. And I remember obviously reading it in the book. And, I asked that question because I also remember Brian and Tara speaking about that at the SHAPE convention itself. So I wanted to learn more about that hidden message myself, because again, we can always learn and get better.
Indeed. Yeah.
I think it speaks to, perhaps even bigger than issues of Black children and physical education, but issues of public education itself. I think it speaks to bigger issues for sure.
Sure. So in New Orleans, when you presented together, standard room only type of environment, there's a lot of questions. People were coming and asking, oh my God, it was amazing. And I was like, oh my goodness, seemed like they wanted more of this. So I'm sure you were asked this question many times. So what will a follow-up book look like? I believe the question of indigenous people came up, correct me if I'm wrong. Yep. Was that one of the questions that all audience asked? So what will be a follow, by the way, when I was sharing the book, talking about reading it from beginning to end, it says first edition. So I said, oh, okay. So there's more to come. So there is more to come. So what will a follow-up book look like? What will it contain? What do you see? What's going on? What talk to us?
So Brian and I have already had one meeting to discuss volume two. And volume two will consist of, and this is going to be a lot more difficult, because if you think Black folks are underrepresented in PEAT, Latino and Indigenous folks, I don't think it's 1%. But we have identified some groups. And so this volume two, we plan to focus on, of course, the intersectionalities. One of the biggest, and Brian kept coming back to this over and over and over again. He's like, we don't address any physical disabilities in the book. And so we're hoping to bring that aspect, but looking through Asian American lenses, and which is very diverse, right? You have Southeast Asians, you've got Chinese, you've got a large group that we actually lump and just call Asians, right? Despite their differences. And then our Latina with an E populations. You also have a language, often a language issue with those folks, and then our Indigenous. And so we've identified a few scholars. We've reached out to an Indigenous scholar who actually gave us, we had a difficult time finding Indigenous folks doing physical education. So she sent us a nice resource. So we're just trying to identify, we're in the process of identifying authors or contributors. I've got two on my team right now. We've got a Latina colleague, Dr. Luciana Zest, who hopefully will participate. And then Dr. Meju Kim, who's Korean, on our faculty. So that's, and it's in my AR, Brian. So we've got a year to submit the proposal, but that's the next, we don't want to lump all of the groups, but the groups are underrepresented. They just are from a scholar standpoint.
Yes.
So not so much Asian groups, but Latino and Indigenous are underrepresented.
Yes, I can attest, because of some outreach I've been trying to do in Canada with some Indigenous folks out there as well. And again, I read many, many years ago during my undergraduate studies of work on hidden closets was about LGBTQ back then in physical education and the stereotypes that exist. So that's another layer as well. So I just wanted to thank you so much. And again, I've always said I'd be willing to be an author at large, since I am fluent in Spanish. It's very difficult for me to even find someone to retranslate an instrument that I use for my study to back to in Spanish, that I translate to Spanish back to English. So totally understand the work ahead, and I wish you the very best. Go ahead, Brian, you want to share?
Yeah, something? Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I know we only have a couple minutes left here, but yeah, Dr. Black and I have stuff in the vault, like Prince, right? I mean, you know, Prince is going to be delivering stuff for the next 20, 25 years, depending on what side of the family is going to own it, but that's another story for another day. I think one of the biggest pieces is illegitimacy. And talking about like with groups, because a lot of it is for groups. Well, first of all, groups that are Black, groups that are non-Black, immigration, representation, insider, outsider, transition. As you mentioned, Dr. Ramsey, language and how important language is, because we judge people on language. Language is power. And we can get into a discussion on that for another day. Who's a citizen? We're having a lot of these conversations now about who's a citizen and what neighborhoods does a citizen, is a citizen a person? And that's tied to like money, and that's tied to access, yes. Appropriation, okay? Like we forget so much about other groups and how much that we've used other groups. We have groups that discriminate, and at the same time, you go into their houses and they have borrowed from all these other different types of cultures, and they can't make the connection, or they don't want to make connection. And then I think the other piece is just time. Because I think time is always a window, as I said, is a continuum. As we continue to get, quote unquote, more multicultural. And to those of you who know me well, I still am doing a lot of work with multicultural education, and it is focused now on Black students now. But, you know, we don't think about time. We don't think about how groups got here and positionality and some of the things that have been shared experiences that have created these different walls where people feel like they can't talk to each other. So those are just some things, and I'll leave you with as well, that I think we're going to add to volume two and maybe other volumes down the road. So we're looking forward to it.
Well, Victor, we have you down.
Sure.
Be on the lookout.
Will do. Thank you. Clancy, thank you.
Again, fantastic. And I would add, the last couple of years, Dr. Kirk out of the UK just published about the precarity of public education right now, the circumstances, the instability. This all speaks to what you're proposing, Brian. I mean, there's a lot to think about moving forward, indeed. And so impressive. And Dr. Ramsey, you mentioned, the DOE and potentially, purchasing this book. My better half, my wife is a health and physical educator, Buffalo Public Schools. They would be well served to read this book as well. So kudos indeed. So with that, on behalf of New York State AFERD, we'd like to thank Drs. Blackshear and Culp for joining us today to share their thoughts and perspectives. To our listeners and our future professionals, the information shared today could serve as a catalyst for your ongoing preparation. This session will be posted on the New York State AFERD website on our podcast channel. Stay tuned for new and exciting episodes scheduled later on in the year.
Yes, and please visit us at newyorkstateaford.org, social media handles at New York State AFERD, or call us at 315-823-1015. For more information, please also note of our many professional development events throughout the year, including our annual state conference at the Turning Stone Casino in Verona, New York this year. It will be from November 16th through the 19th. And thank you to our amazing guests.
Thank you so much. That was awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.